This passage comes, this whole heavy burdens thing, and and then when Jesus says yesterday that no one knows the Father except the Son, and no one knows the Son except the Father, except those who chooses to reveal him. And then this part, it's called the bolt from the Johannine blue. So it means that there's one moment in when Matthew's gospel starts sounding more like John's gospel that just kind of randomly just kind of pops up. And for many scholars, that's actually an indication why John's gospel is particularly accurate. Because why is it that you sometimes don't change something if you don't understand it? You know it's important, but you don't understand it, so you leave it as exactly as it was. So when Matthew all of a sudden just starts sounding like John right out of the blue, you can sense that the author was there, he heard it, and he wants to remember it word for word, so that if you've ever been to like a scholar's lecture or anything like that, you just want to remember the exact phrasing, because you know that one preposition, one to in the wrong place, or one from in the wrong place, the whole sentence can just be destroyed. So you kind of keep it in its overall harmony. And one of the other ways in which something coming out of the blue can be really quite shocking is also the larger context in which we've been listening to it. Jesus has been hammering us this past week. If you've been listening to the Gospels or you've been reading them over as we've gone by, you know, he's been saying, like, any of you who love children, parents, sisters, country, whatever, more than me, are not worthy of me. And he just hammers it down. And you're like, man, this guy is tough. And then he says, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And you just kind of, what on earth is with this guy? Like, now he's just gone completely on the other side of the spectrum. So why on earth would he have the gall to say, even after he himself just said that his teachings are hard, then go right back and say, my yoke is easy? Well, I think it's because he has a vantage point. Obviously, being the Son of God, this makes it rather quite easy. But he has a vantage point where he understands where the real difficulty is. The difficulty is not in the doing. It's in the changing of the heart, which is very, very hard. In fact, only God can do that. But the very thing itself, in fact, is an easy transformation once you've been through it. But when you're in the midst of it, brutal. So today's saint is Camilla Stellalis. I said at the beginning of the Mass, died in the 16th century. Not true, died in the 17th century. 1600s, died 1614. And when he was a young man, his dad was in the military, and he had a slightly fiery temper, and his mom was not particularly of good health. So she died when he was a teenager. And the story goes that he inherited dad's bad temper. He goes off to war to fight some war with the Turks. And then he comes back with his leg permanently damaged to the point where it's basically a permanent impediment for the rest of his life. He has a fiery temper and a gambling problem. He just can't seem to get it under control. So he eventually starts working as a laborer in a monastery, because in certain periods in church history, monks wouldn't do all the manual labor in the house. For instance, there was a monastic revolution in the Middle Ages where the Benedictine work and prayer was simplified to prayer and prayer, or prayer and study. And then they had people, like a third order, whose entire job was to do the manual labor. Well, he was one of the guys that did the manual labor on this monastery, but he wasn't actually a monk. And then eventually he has this conversion moment. He has this conversion moment where one of the monks is preaching, and he says, I think I'm going to dedicate my life to God. And then the monks are like, that's lovely, but you ain't doing it here. So you can only imagine a person with a fiery temper probably wouldn't take that all too well. And so he starts wandering around, and then eventually he has this other conversion where he realizes that his calling is to take care of the sick. And when I was reading in my Office of Readings meditations this morning, it was really funny to read a meditation about a man who is knowingly as a hothead. And then in the meditation, it's like, and he loved the sick, and he was so kind, and he was so gentle with them, and he was like an angel. And I remember, I don't know if you've read that yet, Father Dean. Did you read that one? Did you read the other one? Anyway, it was just so like, what is this gap between this supposedly angry guy and this tender compassion? But I don't think it's a contradiction. I think that that massive gap was bridged by precisely what the grace of God affords. I know many, many angry, slightly compassionate people. Because to be angry usually means that you see an imbalance, you see an injustice, you see things that aren't right. The reason why angry people wind up coming across as just impotent and futile is because they don't know how to direct their energy. So it just goes blah with conspiracy theories and all these other things. They don't know how to actually just get on their hands and knees and to take care of those who are in fact in a vulnerable position, to truly address the either injustice or just the simple tragedy of the moment. And so sickness is one of those things where we feel a non-moral injustice in life. We always ask ourselves these questions when loved ones or we get sick. What did I do to deserve this? What kind of justification is behind all this suffering and pain? Why do the good suffer, and why do the evil live so long and get so much money? We ask ourselves these questions, and in the end, we just go and lose our minds in the process. It's just the way things are. If we really want to fix it, if we really want to struggle against the injustice, then what we do is, without judgment, we go to those who are sick to tend to them, not because they need my help, but in order to tame the beast that is within, I attend to the matter. Camillus, in the writings, he treated the sick as if they were his lifeline, not the other way around. They tamed his heart. And he found rest. He found that rest that only God can give. Come to me, all you who labor and are overburdened, and I will give you rest. The reason why it's easy to be a Christian is because when you know God, you are in the realm in which your heart can find full expression. When you're angry, God can handle your anger. When you want to be tender, God can handle your soft side. When you want to be incredibly analytical, God is smarter than you. When you want to be incredibly emotional, God made your emotions. He's definitely going to beat you at every realm. And so then that gives us the freedom to stretch out our arms, to be ourselves. And which is why I consider the great tragedy of worldliness is this contraction of the spirit, the contraction of the heart, where we always have to learn how to play nice around people, to pretend everything is all right. And then, of course, in the end, we just feel confined and constricted. But in the realm of God, we have that freedom to be able to not unload upon other people our problems. We dump them on the feet of the Savior. And then because we've understood our own pain, we can empathize with the pain of other people. And all of a sudden, it becomes abundantly clear. In fact, being a Christian is really easy. Really, really easy. The only reason it's hard is we keep trying to do it the wrong way. We try to be a Christian on our own steam, whereas Jesus is always trying to invite us into a relationship of grace. Enter his yoke, enter his labor, and you find his rest. And that is why I think that when Jesus tells us that he says, I am gentle and humble in heart. Not too many people that you will ever meet in your lifetime will call themselves humble, and you should believe them. Like if somebody comes up to you and says, by the way, I am very, very humble. Generally, when somebody talks like that, you must start going like, what on earth is with this person? Like, humility is not exactly a self-aware virtue. Humility is proved in the doing. And so one of my favorite prayers is the Litany of Humility. And I don't have it present with me right now. It's in my breviary. I try to pray it every day because I'm not humble and I would like to be. So, and it says, from the desire of being esteemed, deliver me, O Jesus. From the desire of being loved, deliver me, O Jesus. From the desire of being admired and consulted, deliver me, O Jesus. From the fear of being rejected, from the fear of being humiliated, from the fear of being despised, deliver me, O Jesus. That others may be loved more than I, grant me the heart to desire it. That others may become holier than I, granted that I become as holy as I should, Jesus, grant me the heart to desire it. The hard part is not doing the work. The hard part is having the heart. The work is the process of gaining the heart. So with the prayers of St. Camillus, we ask that we might actually get over our hot tempers, whatever addictions might be afflicting us, and to be able to find that those things don't define us, but the grace that is given to us.